What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hello and welcome back to Fuck That. If you're new here, don't forget to hit subscribe so that way you never miss an episode. 30-second announcement before we jump in. I'm not dead, obviously. I'm in graduate school again, so if my release dates are a little bit choppy, I apologize for that. Just know that I'm not quitting the podcast. It might just be a little bit more chaotic in terms of releases. This week, I'm going to be talking about a woman in Texas who had two different husbands die unexpectedly in sequential order, which is the kind of coincidence that I feel like makes your brain immediately start buffering. And if you're sitting there like, Ashley, how the fuck does this even happen when the people involved are in their 30s and 40s? What if I told you the same woman's stepfather worked for the local sheriff's department and had just retired before all of this went down? David Shane Coots was born on March 9th of 1978. For the record, I interviewed several people for this case, both on behalf of David and Coy, family members on both sides and friends as well. So I'm going to introduce them here as they'll come up throughout the episode just to make things easier. I spoke to David's brother and his sister, Alicia. Coy, who is the next husband I'm going to be talking about, I spoke extensively with his sister, Kyla, as well as a woman named Valerie, who was a longtime friend of David, Courtney, and she was also friends with Coy. In fact, Valerie, David, and Courtney go way back, like back to the third grade. So it's a very established relationship between all of them. When Courtney and David had gotten married, Courtney was in the middle of suffering from issues with her addiction. According to those that I interviewed that were close to David, he was really the stabilizer in her life. He stabilized her entire life. He gave her a place to live, helped her get sober, took care of all of the adult logistics that literally who wants to do that, but he did it, while everything else got sorted out. And this worked well enough that Courtney was able to go to nursing school, which David paid for. And that was their arrangement. David worked, he paid, Courtney went to school, and on paper, this looked like progress in their relationship. But unfortunately, the addiction didn't really go anywhere. It just kind of rebranded. So drug use became alcohol use and then daily alcohol consumption. Those around him noticed that she also essentially stopped parenting and pretty much every other responsibility stopped after that. But David kept going to work and paying for everything and then picking up all of that slack as well because nobody else was going to do it. This went on for years. This wasn't just a short phase or a bad stretch. This was truly the structure of their relationship. David continued to carry the financial load and every other responsibility. Courtney bounced between jobs, and everybody involved described this as normal for their marriage, and they were married for about 14 years. At one point, David did leave, but later he came back and nothing fundamentally changed. And this is understandable. They have a long history, 14 plus years, and they have a family, so it makes sense that somebody doesn't want to immediately throw it in the towel. But change requires work, and Courtney really didn't want to do that. So on January 13th, 2018, David asked for a divorce. Before we go any further in the story, we need to talk about Courtney, unfortunately. I'm not going to give last names with Courtney or her family, and I'm just doing that because I don't want to dox people. That's not the goal with this. However, if you want to search further, It's totally up to you how you choose to utilize your free will. Hannah McKay, I mean Courtney, Dexter reference for those of you that don't watch Dexter, was born in Texas in January of 1980. Her mother, Kim, was present in her life. However, her father was not. But Kim did marry a man named Steve when Courtney was younger, and so he really was the stable father figure in her life. We love a present stepfather, maybe just not this one. Stephen also worked for Burnett County Sheriff's Department. That's an important detail, so don't you forget it. All right? All right. Courtney, you could call her a lover girl, a scary one, but a lover girl nonetheless, because she really knows how to get men to marry her. She married her first husband. That's right, David was not the first. He was the second, and he also isn't the last. Jason in 1998, and then the two divorced a couple years later, sometime in 2002. She and David married not long after. And here's why Courtney's background matters specifically in the context of David's death, which I'm going to elaborate on after I give you this background. When David died, Courtney wasn't just some confused spouse standing in the hallway yelling, "Oh my God, what do I do?" Courtney was a registered nurse. Specifically, she worked hospice. So death wasn't some abstract concept to her. It was literally her job. Sit with people, unfortunately experience people dying, knowing what's normal, what isn't, and when you absolutely do not wait around and when you intervene. So when people try to frame what happened next as panic or shock or grief brain, no. We're not doing that here, because that explanation does not apply here. This isn't a case where you have somebody that doesn't work in healthcare just staring at a body like, "Wow, this is bad. What do I do?" Death was literally her job. You clock in, you watch people die, you clock out. She knew what a dead body looks like, and she knows exactly what comes next. And she chose to fuck around anyway. So we have a hospice nurse, a man asking for a divorce, and a series of choices made by her that make absolutely no sense, unless the person making those choices is a straight-up fucking demon. David died on Sunday, January 14th, 2018, the day after Courtney learned David was done. Draw whatever conclusions you want based on that information. David was only 39 years old. In her statement to law enforcement, Courtney said that David had texted her the night before asking for a divorce. She claimed she slept in another room and found him unresponsive in bed the next day, sometime afternoon. And that's the official version. I'm doing air quotes there. Now let's talk about everything else that makes that story seem like bullshit. Valerie, Courtney's childhood friend that I mentioned earlier, stayed with Courtney for about a week after he died. She was there to try to comfort her and support her. But apparently she really wasn't needed. Because something that Valerie noticed right away is that that house did not feel like a house where somebody had just died. Courtney was smiling, her family was there, they were smiling. Just your average happy family for whatever reason right after a husband died. They were cleaning also, like constantly cleaning, not grief cleaning, not nervous, I don't know what to do with my hands kind of cleaning. Aggressive, scrub the house from top to bottom, wiping the walls clean, cleaning. And this stood out because it's fucking weird. And also because this is not how Courtney operated before David died. As I've previously described, she's not really like the go-get-em kind of gal. So completely fucking odd. And just to give a little bit of foreshadowing, the one part that Valerie absolutely couldn't ignore is that years later, after Coy died, she saw the exact same behavior, same cleaning, same odd partying energy. So we had a different husband, but same behavior. Cool coincidence. When I spoke to Valerie, she mentioned something that stuck out to her that kind of felt like Courtney was panicking. She said that Courtney had talked to her openly about injecting David with steroids to help him bulk up, but it didn't really seem like something organic. And on the day that David died, Courtney was incredibly nervous. Nervous enough to say that she hoped that police didn't find the steroids. They didn't, which tracks, because steroids were not found in David's system. So make of that whatever you will. Courtney told police that she had attempted CPR, but Valerie doesn't believe that happened. And Courtney herself later said that she wasn't even sure that she actually did CPR, which is a hell of a thing to be unsure about when you're a registered hospice nurse and this is literally your area of expertise. There is also a gap between when David likely died and when 911 was called. Not some cute little convenient delay. Not a, "Oh, I ran to my neighbor to get help" delay. A large gap, which we'll break down later. And no, it does not help her credibility at all. Alicia, David's sister, told me that Courtney wanted the bed removed immediately. Not later, not after arrangements, immediately. The bed that David died on was taken out of the house within hours and burned. Not by law enforcement, by her family. Just incinerated. Because when your husband dies, nothing says coping like speed running the bed into a bonfire and calling it some kind of self-care. Another little odd tidbit, because I haven't presented you with enough, apparently. That same night, David and Courtney's son Connor was sent to sleep at a friend's house. But this was expressed to me by multiple people. This was not really normal. His son was extremely close to David, and he didn't really often spend the night away. He was younger. So this wasn't something that was normal. It just happened to be conveniently on the same night that David had died. Multiple people also told me that after David's funeral, Courtney, her mother, and others were dancing in the living room. They were drinking, they were partying, not quietly coping, not sitting in silence, just acting like the funeral was an annoying errand that they'd finished and then they couldn't wait to stop pretending to give a shit about.
What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Okay, so here is when things are going to get quite darker. And for those of you that listen regularly, this gave me flashbacks to my Dr. Death episode. So several people close to Courtney, multiple people that I spoke to, said that Courtney talked about death in ways that made people very uncomfortable long before David died. Courtney had told several people around her that she saw that hospice patients were happy when their souls left their bodies when they died. Specifically, she told Valerie that David was happy too when he died because she could see his soul leave his body. And when Valerie asked how she could possibly know that, Courtney said this was something she just knew because she had seen it with patients. Cool. Very normal thing to say out loud and not at all horrifying. But then she kept going, right? Because this isn't bad enough. Courtney openly talked about using a magnet on a hospice patient's pacemaker while he was still alive. Not hypothetically. Not as dark humor as a thing that she actually did. Casually. And Valerie wasn't the only person that she said this to. Multiple people independently told me the same exact story, same details, same delivery, same total lack of concern. Courtney said that she had done this to this patient because the patient wanted to die. So very Dr. Kevorkian. I guess, except I don't really know that she did this to actually put the patients out of their alleged misery. Sadly, she allegedly also did this to an older woman in hospice. According to Valerie, Courtney said that she suffocated her, but she tried to frame it as a mercy kill. She said that her explanation for this was that the woman was old and needed to die, so I guess she wasn't even asking for it. It was just some kind of decision that she made. David's sister, Alicia, confirmed that Courtney claimed that one patient asked her to do it, the first one. But what really freaked her out was that when Courtney continued to talk about it, she said that she was smarter than the cops, that nothing would ever come of it. And I feel like this is a wild amount of confidence for somebody allegedly describing murder like it's some kind of fun anecdote. Don't worry, everybody. Justice did happen because Courtney was suspended from her job. So, you know, she did not lose her license. That's public record and you're able to search it. And I searched it when I was doing research for this episode and it's still active. So there's a very comforting thought that I can fall asleep to. After David died, Courtney unfriended everybody close to him, family, friends. She deleted photos, wiped him out, and moved on fast, like already on to the next thing fast. And according to Alicia, it was only after David was dead that Courtney started telling people he'd been abusive. This was something that had never come up before. This is something that she's going to do again with Coy. And all of this, and we still haven't even gotten to the autopsy. The autopsy is only going to solidify all of the weirdness around this case already. And here is what it documents. I'm going to read directly from the autopsy here. Within the eyes, multiple fine and coarse petechial hemorrhages, as well as large areas of confluent hemorrhage, are present across the upper and lower conjunctivae. Relatively large areas of scleral hemorrhage are present in the lateral left eye. So, this is hemorrhaging in both eyes. It's extensive, bilateral, not incidental. They further state, quote, a few fine petechial hemorrhages are present along the mucosa of the upper and lower frenula, but there are no lacerations or contusions of the inner lips. So we have bleeding inside the mouth, but nothing torn, nothing cut, nothing injured that would account for it. Eyes and mouth hemorrhaging without trauma. And this is a combination that shows up in cases involving oxygen deprivation, asphyxia. That does not necessarily mean that that is exactly what happened here, but it is a common denominator, and the medical examiner acknowledges that. They say, quote, it is my opinion that the cause of death in the case of David Shane Coots, a 39-year-old white male, cannot be determined at this time with medical certainty. The most significant autopsy finding was the presence of numerous fine, coarse, and confluent hemorrhages within the eyes and fine petechial hemorrhages across the upper eyelids and along the inner oral mucosa. They continue to say, the precise cause of the hemorrhages was not determined at the time of autopsy, but such hemorrhages can result from asphyxia. Can result from asphyxia. Great. Toxicology does not provide an explanation. No intoxicants, no drugs pointed to a medical event. Again, no steroids found in his system, despite Courtney allegedly telling multiple people that she had injected him with steroids. The report also does not document injuries consistent with CPR. No rib fractures, no chest trauma, no soft tissue damage. That does not prove that CPR did not happen, but it does not mean the body doesn't support it. So on paper, this is what exists. Hemorrhaging consistent with oxygen deprivation, but no clear medical cause of death. An undetermined ruling. And there is a note that says that the case could be re-examined if more information became available. Which it does. For those of you that are saying to yourself, I bet you nothing happens, you are correct. And David's death didn't stall because there was nothing to look at. It stalled because people looked at it and chose not to keep going. David's death was handled by Comal County. And while this is not the county that Courtney's stepfather had previously worked for, it doesn't mean that he wasn't involved or on scene, because he was very much on scene. Comal County didn't walk into this blind. When deputies and EMS arrived, rigor mortis and lividity were already present. And this is in the official police report, which means that there was already a time of death problem before anybody started pretending that this was straightforward. The 911 call also does not clean that up. Courtney called it in. Dispatch walked her through CPR, which why would she need that? Because she's a registered nurse. During that call, she described discoloration and material coming out of David's mouth. Not great. And Courtney decided to reposition the body before anyone arrived. So by the time law enforcement showed up, the scene had already been rearranged. Cool. Love that for the evidence. This would make sense if somebody was still alive because you don't want them to aspirate. But for somebody that is already dead, it just doesn't make sense. And an RN would certainly know whether somebody was dead or alive. A detective and crime scene tech did show up, but somehow that still turned into a collective shrug. Non-criminal, no urgency, no pushback. And once that call was made, evidence stopped being evidence almost immediately, including the bed that David died in. Remember, it was removed and destroyed shortly after, all thanks to her family, including her stepfather, who again was there for some reason. And like I said before, the medical examiner wasn't really confident. According to the police report, the ME initially kicked around positional or congestive explanations and asked for crime scene photos. That doesn't happen when a case is clean. That happens when something isn't lining up and you're trying to make it make sense. Then there's the sheer amount of information that came in. Como County conducted roughly 20 interviews. Statements were taken, then taken again. Witnesses told investigators about things Courtney allegedly said to them directly, including admissions that she had made while she was intoxicated. They also heard about the timeline. They heard about how hours had passed before anybody checked on him, allegedly, and how about a medically trained spouse just had no idea what was going on or what protocol to follow. The ME ruled the death undetermined and explicitly said the case could be re-examined if more information became available. More information did come in, but nothing changed. The case just wasn't pursued. It wasn't meaningfully escalated, but it wasn't closed either. It just sat there, technically open but functionally dead. It's that bureaucratic sweet spot where I consistently see time and time again that law enforcement can say they did something without doing anything. Time and time again, I see cases like this that are left open to placate the family or to make it look like they're actually trying to do something when in reality, they're just sitting on information for one reason or another.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Let's get back to the grieving widow, Courtney. Turns out grief really isn't Courtney's thing, but replacement husbands are. And after David, Courtney's next husband in the queue was Coy. Coy Lane Hilliard was born on October 25th, 1981. According to his sister Kyla, Coy was the one holding everything together in that marriage. When things broke, he fixed them. And once again, when Courtney was struggling with addiction, Coy became the stabilizer. He gave her a place to live, structure, a reset. The same pattern, but a different man, trying to be a good spouse. Coy was deeply involved with his family. He loved them. He showed up. He carried responsibility. So when Courtney's drinking escalated and the parenting stopped once again, that responsibility didn't disappear, but it landed on Coy. Because that's what happened in that house. Somebody had to function. Kyla said that she had watched her brother change over time. Not because he didn't care, he cared a lot, but because living like that wears you down. After they got married, Coy started to see things in Courtney that he hadn't seen before. Lying, manipulation, control, isolation. The version of Courtney that she chooses not to show until she knows you're locked in. Coy didn't sugarcoat it. He told Kyla that after they married, that's when all the dark secrets came out. And eventually, Coy reached the same understandable conclusion that David did. He couldn't live like that anymore. Coy asked for a divorce 2 weeks before he died. Something that I talk about a lot in this podcast because it's important to me is domestic violence. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Domestic violence doesn't end at physical violence. There is also psychological aggression, abuse, manipulation. And this is something that women face substantially. But men also face it too, and I don't think it's something that should be negated. Almost half of men in the United States experience psychological aggression or abuse by an intimate partner in their lifetime. Abuse can be financial, environmental, emotional, verbal, psychological. There's really just a large umbrella that abuse can fall under, and it's not something that should be ignored just because a man is experiencing it. Around 2 weeks after Coy had expressed that he wanted a divorce, He died on December 8th of 2024. He was only 43 years old. According to Courtney, she spoke to Coy around 6:30 that morning. She said that everything was normal. Yeah, okay. Later, she said that she found him unresponsive in bed, on his back, wearing only his underwear. So this is a different man, but we have the same script. And we'll just pretend like that's a coincidence for now. Burnett County Sheriff's Department was the one that handled this one. You know, the one where Courtney's stepdaddy worked as a corporal. There was no crime scene tech dispatched. Let me repeat that. No crime scene tech. No meaningful evidence was collected. According to Kyla, Courtney's family was allowed to stay inside the house while law enforcement did whatever this was supposed to be. Let's just call it a circus. This is exactly what happened when David died. Why are you allowing family onto a scene when you don't know the cause of death yet? Especially when one of said family members was law enforcement for their entire career. And Burnett County sheriffs just allowed things to be removed from the scene in real time, in front of people. Nobody stopped it. Nobody said, hey, maybe don't take shit out of a death scene that we don't know the cause of yet. Kyla told me that Coy had routine blood work done 2 days before he died. Investigators were told about it numerous times. Did they ever bother to look into it? No, they never bothered to obtain that information, which is a really fascinating approach if your goal is to avoid learning anything that could be relevant in an investigation. Something strange that stood out to everybody is that Coy's blood alcohol level came back at 0.224. Coy hadn't really been drinking that night based on conversations with other people. They did find 3 empty beer cans in the trash. Just 3. So even if he did drink them, that's not really a lot. But somehow that turned into a BAC that would put most people on their ass on the floor. And once again, just like we saw with David, Courtney's timeline didn't hold. It shifted, then it changed again. Details changed multiple times. Statements didn't line up. Lying liars be lying. I think the biggest thing I want to emphasize, though, is that once again, Courtney's father is a retired corporal, according to his LinkedIn, from the same sheriff's office handling the investigation. Retired, yes. Gone, no. He was present, on scene, again, just like before. There was no outside agency that was brought in to avoid maybe a conflict of interest. There was no independent review. Just a department that her stepfather worked for investigating the same woman that had a similar circumstance investigated by another county not that long before. According to witnesses, once again, Courtney's family began cleaning right away. Just full-on cleaning walls, surfaces, constantly. And again, this was something that wasn't normal. This is a woman whose personality is the antithesis of doing something productive like cleaning. So this is odd. To make things even stranger, a witness reported Courtney dumping an unknown substance over the fence daily in the weeks leading up to Coy's death. Requests were made to collect a soil sample, but that never happened either, so add that to the pile. Just like David, Coy's belongings were quickly disposed of. Nobody bothered to ask if his family wanted anything of his. His family was shut out. And her emotional displays echoed the same ones that she put on in the first death. Big reactions when law enforcement was around or when somebody that was important regarding the case needed to see it. Flat when they weren't. Just partying, dancing, happy. Multiple people noticed this again, and law enforcement was like, yeah, no, we don't see anything. You can't see me if I can't see you, right? I don't know. Now let's get into Coy's autopsy. Unlike David's, this one comes back with an answer. Natural causes. But that's pretty much it. That's the conclusion. I do want to be real here, though. A natural ruling doesn't answer questions. It just means that nothing inside the body triggered a criminal finding. And that only really works if the investigation did its job. And guess what? It didn't. This autopsy does not establish a time of death. It does not address conflicting accounts about Coy's final hours. It does not explain how there were only 3 beers found in the trash on scene and he had a BAC of 0.224. But this isn't surprising because, again, there was no crime scene technician called, and this autopsy obviously cannot account for evidence that was removed before documentation. A medical examiner can only work with the information that's given to them and what they see presented in the body. And in this case, what was given to them outside of what was presented with Coy's body, that was incomplete. So natural kind of becomes less of a conclusion and more of a default, not because everything made sense, but because there was no outside information given and nothing was pushed further. After Coy had passed, the money started moving. Not metaphorically, literally. Relatives noticed that before Coy's death, money was being shifted out of joint accounts, and insurance policies that had existed quietly suddenly meant a lot. Because she had an insurance policy out on David, who again was 39 when he passed, and Coy, who again was 43 when he passed. So life insurance payouts were triggered. And that happened for 2 different policies, one on Coy and one on David. When David passed, she had gotten a home from that. And then when Coy had passed, she had gotten 2 homes and 7.5 acres. So we have a life insurance policy on a man who was only 39 years old, David, as well as the house that she gained in his death, as well as all of the belongings that they didn't throw out that they kept and withheld from David's family. Now we have Coy. Weeks leading up to his death, a series of mysterious and inexplicable transfers from his bank accounts, 2 homes and 7.5 acres, and another insurance payout on a man who was only 43 years old when he passed away. What upsets me the most about this, as it does with other similar cases, is that outside of David and Coy's family, life went on. Courtney relocated again, and she got into a new relationship again shortly after. Same repetitive pattern, like clockwork. David and Coy's cases aren't going anywhere by accident. They aren't going anywhere because of who Courtney's stepfather is, period. According to Kyla, Coy's case is currently sitting at the DA's office for review, which is just where uncomfortable cases go to be smothered quietly. Kyla has been continuously led on and continuously let down. They have not done a single additional investigative step since early summer, not one. No movement, no urgency, no follow through. And the most basic thing you'd do in any normal death investigation, maybe pulling up phone records and communications, that still hasn't been done. Courtney's records are untouched. Subpoenas weren't even attempted because somebody decided early on that this was not a fight worth picking. Months later, and nothing. After everything that had been raised, and after everything that doesn't add up. And to me, it sadly makes sense. I vehemently disagree with what they're doing, but it makes sense when you think of the family. Why would this happen with Courtney's family involved? Think of her father's position. Why would anything happen with that connection? There are no missing pieces here, no final clues that are left out, nothing that we're just waiting to uncover. What's happening is happening blatantly out in the open, but they are choosing not to look. They are choosing not to pull records. They are choosing not to force answers. Nothing is happening because nothing is supposed to happen. And if that doesn't make you angry, it should, because this is what it looks like when the justice system decides that some deaths are inconvenient and some families are untouchable. 2 men that they are trying to erase, 1 family being protected, and a system hoping everybody shuts up and moves on. I am going to attach Kyla's social media that she made on behalf of David and Coy in the show notes. I hope that you follow her story and her case. She has so much more information. And I am going to be posting some calls to action in the upcoming days. So I implore you, if you listen to this, please do your part and help get this out there. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard today, please like, review, subscribe. You can find me on TikTok. I do weekly live streams, F.Pod, Instagram, F._pod. If you want access to all of my episodes early and ad-free, as well as bonus episodes and archived episodes, find me on Patreon, F.Pod. Website is F.Pod.com, and there is sweet, sweet merch on there.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.